All right, today I've got a great guest on today, Shep Rose. He is the reality star, been on Bravo's Southern Charm the last 11 seasons. Congratulations to that. And he's got a bunch of other accomplishments that we're going to get into. But first of all, Shep, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mark. Good to see you. I need to come to Sun Valley. I mean, what's taking me so long?
We're going to work that out. But let's talk about where I first met you, which I believe was a year ago in January. And you and I both ended up in Costa Rica, of all places, at this place called Rhythmia, which is a center for people to go down and do ayahuasca. And we met you because I was there with my buddy, Mike Cirilli, who is a former Navy SEAL. And we were shooting a show on behalf of Rhythmia. And one of the guys, another NFL player, had backed out. And so we just, by happenstance, happened to be sitting next to you. Mike struck up a conversation. And the next thing you know, you were in our documentary, which was hilarious.
Yeah.
So let's go back and ask you the first question is, why were you down there? What were you trying to accomplish?
Yeah. It's funny. I was messaging with Sorelli this morning and Wellborn. We're on a chain on Instagram. We make fun of each other endlessly. It's a lot of fun. So we were giving each other a hard time this morning. I love that. Mark, it was 2 Januarys. It was a longer than you think ago, basically. Yeah.
I'm losing my mind as I get older. Go ahead.
And funny enough, I've just finished a book. I wrote about the experience. So it is edited and packaged, and now it needs to be sent to the printer, I guess. So that'll be ready in May and June. I'll have to come back and talk to you once you read it, because you're in the book, of course. I talk about you guys. So I went there because sort of the TV life that I've enjoyed immensely started to become a little out of control with my schedule. Sort of the old thing, like, you've got a lot of free time and a pocket full of cash, and it can be a dangerous thing. Idle hands are a devil's workshop, as you know, as you commiserated with me about your time when you left the NFL. So, things were a couple incidents. I was like, am I even in control of myself? And it scared me a bit. So I thought I had to shake things up. So I went down there to Costa Rica. Another Navy SEAL friend who lives here in Charleston recommended it. He said he and his wife went together, and it was very helpful in many ways. So,
yeah, I think one of the things that I really like about you, Shep, is that when you showed up and we were all like meeting each other for the first time, and you know the camera was on, and I know you're used to that, but you also brought a real authentic, honest opinion to what you were going through, of what you had been going through, this lifestyle of you, and we'll talk about Southern Charm here in a minute, but. You know, I mean, it's just like the perfect storm. Like, you've got super cute girls and you've got good dudes and people, and there's money and there's fame and there's this and there's that and there's drinking. And so, like, how do you like stay centered when all this stuff is going around? And you were just trying to be really real about, you know, yourself and where you wanted to go and what your goals and aspirations in the future, so you don't end up like, you know, Mr. Fun Guy. And at some point in time, that gets old.
Yeah, that was it. I mean, I was trapped in a persona, so to speak. I felt like I still feel that way somehow, but or sometimes, but way less so. I mean, so here I was, and I write about this. You know, my heroes in life were renegades and writers and actors and athletes who didn't play by the rules, and you know, maybe like a Joe Namath type guy who just lived right up to the hilt and also managed to figure out how to win a Super Bowl kind of thing. Of course, I never won a Super Bowl. I've never been in an Oscar movie. I've never written a Pulitzer Prize winning book, not yet at least. But so those are the guys that I sort of looked up to, and And so all of a sudden, I was 33. I was on a TV show. I'd gained, I mean, by some grace of God, fallen ass backwards into this TV world. And I handled it in the beginning like anybody probably would. I had a lot of fun with it. And people wanted to spend time with me. They wanted to buy me shots. They wanted to, hey, come meet us. Hey, come over here. And so I was everything to everyone, basically. And I enjoyed the heck out of it. But yeah, at a certain point, you have to pay the piper on that. And that's sort of where I was.
That's a lot of self-discipline. And I have been down that road myself, and I know exactly what you're talking about and just when to say no. And it's hard to say no because you want to please everybody, right? Let's go back.
Well,
And
someone asked me what the key to life was, my life, because they was like, man, you're always here, there, having fun. I said, I say yes. I say yes. If you have an idea, there's a 90% chance I'm gonna say, hell yeah, let's go. So that's my secret, also my kryptonite, maybe at the same time.
I trust me, the one thing that's a little bit different than the NFL per se to this reality TV show is that, again, it's a reality TV show and they bring up and they set up circumstances. And, when I was back there, I think it was last March, and you and I were golfing, we talked a little bit about this and they were going to bring in some new young talent and things like that. And so, again, it's kind of the perfect storm. The NFL per se, or even like Mike and his Navy SEAL stuff, there's just a lot more structure and discipline, or like hardcore discipline that's around it. And in Mike's case, people are getting killed, and in my case, you're getting cut, right? So if you go off and you venture too far off on the left, and in your world, it's more like celebrated a little bit because that's what reality TV is. The more drama, the better.
Yeah, true. It's funny. My friend and many ways I look up to him is Andy Cohen, who is sort of the face of Bravo and does his show Watch What Happens, and we're friendly, and if I have a question, he gets right back to me, and we have a good rapport. And when he called me after a particular incident before I went to Rhythmia, he said, and I was very remorseful and embarrassed. And he was like, I can't, I write this in the book. I can't help you if you act a certain way around certain people. I love having you on the channel. I want you to be here. I think you add value, but you can't be showing your ass like that because it just takes one person or one misperceived or correctly perceived action, and you're gone, man, and I can't help you. So, and I when I did res re re express the regret, he goes, well, that's good to hear. And I said, what do you mean? He was like, you'd be surprised. Some people in your field of work or whatever you want to call it, they think any press is good press. I understand that notion, but I don't agree personally. I don't want to be in the headlines for the wrong reasons,
Well, you and I talked about this a little bit in Costa Rica, which was essentially you've created this platform, and with the platform, you've just got such a great opportunity to go serve in such a great way to so many different people. And as an example of that, one just little bits and piece, we're not doing it this year, but I think last year we played in that Las Vegas charity. You actually got me invited to it because my daughter has epilepsy, and that's what the whole thing is all about. And really connected with the guy that runs it, and hopefully they're gonna like re-kick that in next year. I'm not sure where that's at, but at the end of the day, it's stuff like that where now you're using your celebrity to help draw other people in and sponsors in, so then you can lift, others who are in need who haven't had near the charmed life as you have had, in terms of you were essentially, and tell me if I'm wrong, if my recollection is you're from Charleston. You're in this situation, you're essentially in this bar, you just happen to be in the right place at the right time, and you met the right guy, and he came up to you and he goes, yeah, I've got this idea about kind of the socialite thing going on here in Charleston, and da 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 da, and one thing led to another, and then a screen test, and next thing 11 years later, you've just been on this roll,
It's
right?
amazing. Yeah, it was very serendipitous and fortunate, really. And it's been amazing. It's I get to ex I see it as a way of creatively expressing myself. I'm basically doing improv, on camera. So I get to be hopefully insightful and funny and controversial, provocative, all these things. I get so that part of it I like, but then the part I really get value from, as you were saying before, is and yes, I love being approached by Boys and Girls Club here in town, or Meals on Wheels and stuff. Yes, the answer is yes, again, yes. But it can be as simple as someone with their daughter or having lunch. Hey, Shep, we're here. We love your show. We came here because we saw it on TV or whatever. It would mean so much if you took a picture with us, simple picture. Oh yeah, sure, no problem. Like, you just made our weekend. And I'm like, oh my God. I mean, that's a might be a bit of hyperbole, but the fact that I can enhance someone by just walking by isn't lost on me, not in the least,
Well, most, this is one of the things I've found with these different things with my Emmy and Common Seven Summit. Like, you live in your world, and that's all you think about because, and it's an amazing world. And I live in my little world, and that's all I think about. Or no, I don't think about me, but I just think about, like, what's my next thing, or how do I accomplish this next goal, or whatever. And, the reality is that most of the world's not made up like that. They're not goal oriented as nearly as much, and have been able to achieve, especially something that's out in the public eye. And you've been able to do that and very successfully. So you were one of the original, you are the original guy, from the show going back. Let me ask you this question. So you and I were hanging out last, I think it was last March or April in Charleston. First time I'd ever been there. You're from there. That's where the show is based around. What is it about Charleston? I mean, why not Charlotte or, New Jersey or, Manhattan Beach, California or so? I don't know. But, what is it where this guy, like, in his vision, he thought there would be this stickiness, and he was right about assembling a cast together in that particular town, doing the cool things that you guys do and are able to experience. What is it about Charleston that has that magic?
Well, I think it's summed up. General Grant, stormed through the South and burned down many of the cities that he came through in the end of the Civil War. And he came to Charleston and said, "There's no effing way I'm burning this city down." A lot of people say it's because his girlfriend in college had ties to Charleston, but I think he saw the beauty, the historical buildings, just the charm of it, no pun intended. And it's, on a peninsula, so you got the water, you've got cobblestone streets. It's just very tasteful, this aesthetically. And then you've got the beaches on either side of that. And so I think that's a big part of it. I say Charleston is sort of a character in the show. And I think that's on purpose. But you mentioned Jersey, and I'll say this, and some people, maybe I shouldn't, but that show Jersey Shore, remember? That peeled back the curtain on a place and culture that I think a lot of people were like, "What is going on on Jersey Shore?" Because you just heard sort of maybe derogatory things about it, but you wanted to see what the hell that phrase meant. And I think correctly he assessed that there's a curiosity about the South, and I'm not talking about hillbilly South, although I'm sure there's a actually yeah there's a curiosity about that. I mean, to a lesser extent, I don't want to label anybody, but like Duck Dynasty, for example. I mean, they're in their camo and shooting ducks. By the way, I love shooting ducks. So, but there's just a curiosity about the South. And then what ours is more of an erudite South, well-educated, well-spoken, sort of Mark Twain, Flannery O'Connor, Faulkner. I mean, there's a lot of prolific Southerners that have come through in history, and most are humorous and sort of aw shucks, and that's sort of what I don't know. Now I'm pontificating.
Yeah, no, but I think you're right. And again, I'm from Seattle, so I'm from the West Coast, and most of my life, when I was with the Raiders, the Los Angeles Raiders back in the day, and I did play for the Saints for a couple of years, so I was down in New Orleans. I saw that, and that's got its own kind of charm. But you're right. I mean, it is super cute. You've got water running all over the place. I came out to your island. We went to your place where you play golf, and that, I mean, all of it is just classic, and the structures. And we stayed down at the Emmeline, I think that was the name of the hotel, where it's just kind of right across the street where there's this area where they're now trading goods and services. And at one point in time, that's where they actually ran the slaves through or something. I mean, it's just even unbelievable that we were even doing that, but that's what they did, right? Back in the whole South. That's what much of the Civil War was about. I can certainly see it's sunny and it's, people are happy and there's a good vibe there. And I can't remember, maybe it was King Street. Was that Main Street we were walking down? Does it sound right? Yeah. So I can certainly see, like, just as a backdrop, a setting, where can you have it? It was kind of nice and tight without being New York and this grandiose, but having all the stuff that surrounds it. So let me ask you this, and this is actually coming a couple of questions from my obsessed neighbors across the street from Boston, but they want to know, how close are you to your cast people who've been on the show in the past year? You've been the one constant since day one. You're in season 11, but how close are you to the people who have left?
I care about them a lot. I text with Cameron and message Cameron a lot. Well, a lot. Every now and then we stay in touch. And the other ones, if they needed anything, they know that they could text me. But it's sort of like I'm in my bubble, like you said before. And I don't know. I wish I was better about it, frankly. But Cameron is very close, and
It's a lot like my old teammates. It's a moment in time, and then they're great. And there was a moment in time, and we had a lot of great experiences. And then something happens, and they move to teams or cut or something, and then you move. It doesn't mean that any negative's happening. It's just they've moved on and they've gone back to their city or wherever they're from.
But this same is true with some of my best friends on earth. If you're not standing in front of them, they've got soccer practices for their kids. They've got, their wives and their friends and all this stuff. It just life happens.
So another question I had is, so now, you've been very fortunate. I don't know if it's the longest running show on Bravo. I don't know what is or would be comparison on that network. But if you ever look back on episodes, in episode four or season four or six or seven or eight or whatever, you can pick any one of them. But do you have any kind of self-reflection about things that went on there, or was that just more circumstantial?
I don't watch. I watch the season that I'm currently on just so I can know how to, or I mean, I've found myself, I'm a fan of the show now. It's crazy. I watch, tonight is there's an episode. I don't know when this airs, but it's every Wednesday at 9. And, we get the episodes a few days early, and of course I watched, and I thought it was really good. I thought they, and I sent the production company and editors, I said, great job. And we had a little bit of a laugh. Now in years past, I've been like, you sons of bitches, but I don't get angry anymore. I used to take things personally. And by the way, if I said it, I said it, like you're in control of what comes out of your mouth. Now, also that's part of the being provocative. Like you're probably going to say something stupid, and that might get preyed upon, but I don't know. I'm at the point in my life where I'm like, okay, look, the only people that get upset about these things online usually, always online. Oh, you bastard! All this. They're nobody. I mean, they're nobody. I mean, they're not indicative of any sort of sample size of people who enjoy the show. I mean, if you have time to go online and write nasty things, then yeah, God bless you, honestly. So
I don't know who does that, right? I mean, I know they do it, but I don't know, like, why wait? Like, there's so much good you could do in the world. Why would you dip back into that?
There has to be a deep sadness somewhere in there, and that's why I have empathy for them. But anyhow, you meet people on the street, everybody's so happy to see you. They love the show. That's the thing. And that's the thing about, our country right now. In person, everybody's great. You get behind the keyboard and you become a big tough guy. You know what I mean?
I do. It's crazy, and that's a whole nother element. All right, last question as it relates to this Southern Charm. So obviously you've been on the show for 11 straight years now, and I don't know what the future is or what the future for you is, but as the girls are getting younger, and obviously you're not getting any younger, just like me, we all age, and there becomes a gap. Like, where do you see yourself going out into the future? And I don't even know if it has to do with the show or you've got other plans in mind.
I'm very excited about the future. I'm my first and primary responsibility and allegiance is with Bravo. They've been very good to me, and it's not lost on me. It hasn't been perfect, but what is perfect? What job relationship was 100%? I would say I'm pretty darn lucky in the world of television, and I did not aspire to do this either. It was completely accidental. So, I'm going to continue to work in the entertainment space. I think I've got to develop a pretty good muscle for it. Me and the creator of our show, Whitney, have started to do sort of little excursions and travel, and we have permission. We're not doing it against anyone's will, and we'll see where that goes. And I'm going to keep writing. I'd love to entertain the thought of a family and things like that, but I'm not going to rush into that. Although some would say, well, it's been 46 years. No one's here rushing into anything. So, but that's maybe the biggest decision of your life is your partner, right? So make
No,
the
and
most.
I've been through it. I've been through it now, I've been through it once, and when it doesn't work out, it's no fun. But that's like all relationships, right? And sometimes the grass isn't always greener on the other side, and what you got is pretty damn good. And but that takes that couple, and only those two people know what is super green, right? Nobody else knows that. So that's on your timeline.
Well,
Okay.
it's funny, Mark. Since my book is fresh in my mind, I don't know if you remember when we were there, and I somehow the word follow your heart came into my head, and I kept asking myself, what does it mean to follow your heart? What does it mean to follow your heart? And so I went to the third night of ayahuasca asking a specific question, and that's what they actually very much recommend you do. Be specific. And man, that night was outrageous. The things that I saw and came to the conclusion about. And I think one of the facets of following your heart, just like you have done with hiking and climbing, is chase your passions. Nothing bad can come out of that. Assuming your passions are a benign pursuit. For example, mine is fly fishing and surfing and hunting, and golf to an extent, although everybody loves it. But these things can take you to interesting places, you'll meet interesting people. And you'll have really rewarding. I just came back from Christmas Island in the middle of the Pacific.
I know
Fly
where that
fishing.
is. Yeah, bonefish.
Kiribati is what the islands. There's nothing going on there except for fishing and coconuts. It was freaking awesome, and I really enjoyed it. I met all these people, most of them from the West Coast, fellow fishermen, and then I don't know, who knows what that's going to spawn.
No, I love that. And one of the things I talk about quite a bit is the pyramid of success that my head coach Don James had taught me, which he took from John Wooden, the famous UCLA basketball. And what really that competitive greatness, it just means, whatever you're gonna do, you can't be results oriented. You have to be process driven. which means you love the process. You love being out there. You love doing, like you, as your words were, follow your passion. And when you do that, you're going to have good days and bad days and whatever, and how am I going to get there? But because your love of the game, you will get through those hard times. You will get through the things to keep you propelling towards, what you want to do. But that's cool. And I love this whole thing. I mean, I, like yourself, I've been on all seven continents. I've been all over the world climbing. I just got out of, it was up in the Dolomites in Italy. I was climbing all over there. And just like you said, the amount of people and the culture and just new influences and new perspectives too. And what you found, and you said this a little bit earlier, is that at the end of the day, people are people, right? You have these governments doing wacky things, and that seems like, oh, they, Iran or whatever, pick your country, represents this, but the people are cool. They're great.
Big time. I lived in Dubai and I
Good.
met all these interesting. I went out, this is years ago, but two of my favorite people were Iranian girls that were working in Dubai. And just, I'm from South Carolina and, you're kind of taught, oh, everyone's bad and bad intentions over there. And totally not true. You need to go out and see for yourself. I mean, I wouldn't recommend traveling to Iran. Please don't, dear listener.
You don't want to do that right now.
But I mean, just traveling anywhere. And I think it should be like required activities for most people in the world. I think it would expand your mind.
It always expands your mind and gives you also compassion. I mean, here's the thing I found. I've been down to Tanzania a couple times, Kenya, climbing down there. And you're talking about, I've been to the Serengeti, right? I've been to these villages. I've been to these places where there's these wooden huts with dirt floor. The Sherpa, they on average in Nepal, they make $6,000 a year. That's like, they hit the home run at $6,000 a year. And the happiest people I've ever been around in my life are the poorest people I've ever been around. Now, I'm not talking about the beggar on the side of the road, but I'm talking about the people within the community. And what they value, I mean, the monetary currency in the Serengeti is a goat. They don't have money. It's a goat. You're measured on your wealth on how many goats you have. Think about that, right? But just again, it's just learning perspective on what's important and what's not, in your life. And it's really interesting. The one thing I wanted to come back to the ayahuasca experience, because when I was interviewing essentially three different people, there is the professional jiu-jitsu guy, there was
Anji.
you, Anji, and then there was Mike. And Mike was like, this doesn't work. I don't really care about it. I'm out after 2 days or something like that, which was cool. And then the jiu-jitsu, he was just really deep and sadness and finding. And you were like, this is great, right? And I don't know what it is about your brain that just it almost made you expand in a way of your creativity on possibility. And that's what it was. It was always super cool. I mean, one, since I wasn't in the room on those particular nights because I was the like straight guy not doing that, but just filming and getting observations, I looked out my window and up in the tree was some guy who thought he was a chimp, right? So I was like, what is going on
I
here?
wrote about that.
Oh my God, that
That
was
was so
hilarious. Yeah,
funny.
they're out there, big,
You had like spotlights outside of your window looking for this guy who had run into the woods.
It looked like a SWAT, team coming in, right, to extraction. But, with you, it was just so cool because you just, the whole time you were explaining it was just, you had a smile on your face and it just felt like you were unlocking possibility, right, in a really cool, positive, energetic way, which just had to do with a direction of what, like you said, things are coming to your heart, what's your passion, things like that, that you could go and explore what those things are. And the whole time you were journaling, which it sounds like this is what this book is about.
I know, man. You have to make leaps of logic in these situations, and you have to be, they say, surrender, and that's very important. Don't fight it. Don't wonder what it might be. Just accept it and sort of lay back and connect. There's some dots to be connected. For example, the shaman on the second night kind of came through the place, and the shaman and her helpers or his helpers have this they're making these guttural sound, and then there's bongos, and you're just like, whoa, this is crazy. You just gotta like realize that first and foremost. And then the shaman sometimes takes a sip of this potion and sprays it like kind of all over your chest and arms and face, and then she has feathers and you know sort of adorns you and rubs you down. You're just like, oh my God. And so it was my turn to be adorned, so to speak, and blessed and baptized, whatever you want to say. And the woman was next to me, the shaman doing her thing. She comes to me, I get on my knees, and you know, I'm pretty out there, but I can, you know, converse. And she's like, "Are you okay?" And I said, "Yeah, I'm okay." She goes, "You are okay, brother." And moved to the next guy, did the next guy. I was like, ah, I was passed over. What I thought was, what I hopefully correctly thought, now she couldn't have meant this in the least. The way I interpreted that was, you don't need anything, Shep. You have everything right here. You don't need no additives, no preservatives. You have everything that anyone could ever want or need inside of you and around you with your family. Like, don't think you need or want anything more. And then I went into some spiral of untangling the phrase want and need and how it's an empty pursuit in a bottomless pit and all this crazy shit, man. Just for one tiny interaction, that's what it spawned.
I had a interaction. The shaman that came to me, I don't know, her name was Rainbird or something. I was just like,
I
whoa.
love that girl.
Oh, she was awesome. And she had made me a prayer. She goes, I had a vision about, you and like where you're about to fly to. And I just had to make this bracelet and blah, blah, blah. And she put it on me and I wore it until it broke, But Rainbird again open to all possibility, and that's their journey, that's their path, and it's just like it was kind of a spiritual experience.
I would say so. And then, you know, the crazy part was you tell everybody shares their story, and a lot of them are just absolutely heartbreaking. And then you realize again for how good you've had it compared to a lot of people. I mean, out there walking around. And then on top of that, you share your story of what occurred or what you envisioned the night before, and the staff goes, "Oh yeah, that is a reoccurring thing." And you think, this can't be an accident. This, like, there's certain things, like the three things, a couple of the things were interaction with dead relatives, and we had several people in our group that had some very whoa stories about reconciliation with deceased relatives and friends. And I actually did too on the last night. We won't get into it. And then another was having surgery. You're cut open somewhere on your body and sort of rejuvenated and then sewn back up. And like, it's just weird and so ethereal. Like, I don't even know. I think it's fascinating.
And to anybody listening to this, we're talking about metaphorically being cut open, right? Not actually being cut open down in the jungles.
I don't have any scars, although you could argue.
No, I appreciate that. Okay, so let's talk about when your book's coming out. Is it soon?
End of May, early June.
All right, and this is gonna be on Amazon.
Yeah, it's I semi self-published. I've got someone, a publisher I'm working with, but I shopped it around and nobody was all that excited about a book about ayahuasca, I guess. But I think as I walked around the world after my experience there and talk, and I would mention it at a party and someone would say, "Sit down, like, I want to talk to you." You know, like, what happened? How is it? What is it? You know, so I think there's a real curiosity about it out there in the world, and I'm hoping I tap into that and maybe help some people think about alternative medicines. But yeah, it's called, you'll like this, Nothing in Moderation: A Psychedelic Reckoning with Excess.
I love that. Well, listen, what we're gonna have to do is do a recap
Okay.
when this book
Yeah,
comes
you're going
back
to have
out.
to read the book and we're going to have to go through it. Yeah.
You got your copy of Finding Your Summit that is coming to
Yes.
your front door. I know that you and I are going to talk about that later, but let's for sure do a follow-up. So I want to dive in, send me the book, read it, and then we can have a great chat about it.
What's yours about? Summit.
You know, it's about the peaks and valleys and how to overcome that with faith and resilience and things like that. So, you know, I think it with the things kind of like you know, the way that people have seen my journey, you know, playing in the NFL, playing in the Seven Summits, becoming the first NFL guy to do that, winning this little baby here, the Emmy, running
Sweet.
Sports Illustrated for the last 10 years. It all looks super shiny on the outside, but you know, there's been a lot of valleys in there, and like the grit and the resilience in those things that I've had to do to climb my way out of it. And it's been this kind of one same common system that I've employed every single time. Because, you know, when you put all these things together, it's not just luck. You know, there's skill in there, and there has to be a system. Took Sports Illustrated from number 17 to number one, outpaced, went ahead of ESPN. It's not an easy thing to do. So, the question is like, how did that all happen? When I went through a divorce, so you know, that hit me like a ton of rocks. How did I climb out of that? My dad died of a stroke right around that time. How did I deal with that? So it's just all those things that, you know, the pitfalls, and it's just not all shiny, but everybody has that capability and that possibility within their life to make something happen.
I can't wait to read it.
Love it. Love it. Love it. All right, buddy. Well, listen, I appreciate you coming on. Where can people find you? I know you've got a great Instagram channel.
Yeah, relationship. So instead of ship, relationship, it's relationship, which that's what my friends used to call me when I had a girlfriend, because I was not as wild and fun.
I love it. I love it. I love it. All right. Listen, so much appreciate you coming on. You're such a good guy. Love talking to you. Great enthusiasm. I love guys that or girls that bring a lot of energy to the table, have that half full glass mentality, and that's you all the way.
Yeah, oh man, thanks, Mark. Again, send me some dates on Sun Valley. I'm not sure when I can get out there. Maybe summer's the best. I don't know. I don't know. What do you think?
I'll get back to you soon here.
All
So
right.
let
Sounds
me,
good.
anyways, we got to jump off this. It's going to end, but I so appreciate everything you've done. Okay.
All right. Same to
There he
you.
is, the one, the only Shep Rue.
All
Thanks,
right.
buddy. Okay.
Same to
Right
you.
on.
Cheers.
Bye.